This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, we have a repeat guest, but we are so excited to have her today on the program. Who is it?
Yes, it is a total pleasure to welcome back Kristen Arnold. Kristen is a meeting facilitator, moderator, trainer, keynote speaker, and the author of Powerful Panels, a step-by-step guide to moderating lively and informative panel discussions at meetings, conferences, and conventions. And Kristen also wrote an article that was featured in the June 2020 issue of the Toastmaster, How to Moderate a Panel Discussion Virtually. So we wanted to have Kristen back for three reasons. First, here in the age of coronavirus, so much is moving online, both in the corporate world as well as in Toastmasters. We have conferences and corporate events. We have in Toastmasters officer trainings and district meetings moving online. Secondly, now with pathways being rolled out around the entire world, there is the panel discussion elective at level 5. So today's discussion will be helpful to inform that. And then third, like you mentioned, Greg, we had Kristen here 5 years ago on episode 97. That was back in 2015. And it was such an informative and fun interview. We jumped at the chance to have Kristen back. So Kristen Arnold, welcome back to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Why, thank you for having me. It's always fun to be chatting with you, Ryan and Greg.
So let's get right into it. Kristen, what is it about these panel discussions that people just find so appealing?
Well, I think people are looking for a frank discussion, something that is intimate and personal, and something that you can't find on YouTube or Google or TEDx. They want something that they can't get anyplace else.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you've noticed, perhaps beyond the online piece, because that's the big obvious answer, but have you noticed any trends in the past 5 years about how panel discussions are conducted or just anything that's developed in the space that you can share?
Yeah, so I did some research on this, and I did find almost every meeting, conference, convention has some sort of panel. And a panel is not a one-on-one interview. It's not a town hall. It's not a roundtable discussion. It is somebody who is moderating a discussion between two or more experts or practitioners or people who are knowledgeable in a certain topical space. Most people don't have high expectations of a panel. In fact, they kind of come in looking for that intimate conversation that they can't get anywhere else. But they usually walk away being a little disappointed. And part of that is because our audiences are much more sophisticated and they see talk shows, evening talk shows, daytime talk shows, your news shows. They are using a lot of these formats, panel formats, to not only inform, but to entertain us. And so there's an increasingly higher bar on what a panel should look like than when it was first described in the 1930s as a discussion.
I hear what you're saying about raising the bar, but sometimes you watch shows or you listen to discussions and all they're trying to do is to get a rise out of the other person. It's almost like in some respects, they are a waste of time and you're certainly ready just to change the channel.
Audiences' expectations are shaped by what we see on television. And you do see some TV shows, particularly political talk shows, that are just looking for the soundbite or to have a debate or to pitch people's ideas against each other. And frankly, if that's the format that you want in your panel, you could actually riff off of that TV show. If that is not your desire, that you would like to have a much more rich and constructive and collaborative conversation, then it is imperative for you as a panel moderator to create that space where you can have that constructive conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about how that's done. You mentioned in your article that a moderator is not the same as an MC. There's a difference here. So maybe just tease that out for us a little bit. What does that role look like? How is it that you facilitate that conversation?
Actually, I mentioned that in a blog posting. So kudos for you for reading my blog. I really appreciate that at powerfulpanels.com. An MC is somebody who welcomes the audience. They tee up the speaker. They provide transitions, segues. They might connect some of the dots. They thank people for coming. They issue housekeeping rules. They may or may not, as part of those duties, moderate a panel discussion or conduct an interview with one of the speakers or do a host of activities. Being a panel moderator is a very specific function that an MC may or may not do. And sometimes if you're an MC, you may not be that skilled at asking questions and continuing the conversation and probing and making it meaningful for the audience. They're similar activities and there are some connections, but they're not exactly the same skill set.
You can tell that Ryan and I did our homework. We did lots of research on you. We just couldn't remember what we found where.
There's a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah, no, it's interesting that you mentioned this because I know we talked a little offline and there were a number of takeaways that I had from our conversation in 2015. Because back in 2012, our civic elections used Toastmasters as moderators for the candidates forum. And of course, that was in 2012. When we spoke in 2015, I realized then how many mistakes I made. But we'll leave that for another time.
You know, don't beat yourself up too much. You know, for the Toastmaster listeners, this is a developed skill. Just like giving a speech and leadership, it's not a natural, innate, you're just going to like get up there and do a fabulous job your first time. I mean, I don't know about you, but the first time I ever gave a speech, I'm not that brilliant. Same thing when first time I moderated a panel, I was probably made many more mistakes, but it's from those mistakes that we learn. You know, what do they say? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. We learn from our mistakes, and that's what makes us better speakers. It makes us better leaders. It makes us better panel moderators.
No, absolutely. And moderating a panel is certainly a great opportunity for Toastmasters to practice their skills. But on the other side of the moderation is sometimes as a moderator, you might have an opportunity to select panelists. Now, in your article, you suggest rounding up so-called deep people. What are deep people?
Of course, I have an acronym. Don't we all have acronyms for everything? The D stands for diverse. So I think that your panel should represent the demographics of the audience and as much visual diversity as you can get. I know there's been a lot of conversation about MANLs, which is all male panel. And I do think that there's an opportunity to just be more diverse, especially in today's day and age where we have much more racial reconciliation needs that go on. I think take a look at your audience and try to have the same kind of demographics on your panel. And don't be satisfied with saying, well, I don't know anybody. Well, dig a little deeper. There is a lot of talent out there. You just have to work at it. Go find it. Make it an option. Don't make it optional. Make it like, I am looking for this kind of panelist. And, you know, you'd be surprised. When you start looking, you start finding.
True. It's a great tip. Yeah.
E is for expertise. So it's a recognized authority or a thought leader or somebody who's got strong credentials or a practitioner or somebody who has some reason why an audience member would want to come listen to that person. The other E in the deep is eloquent. They should just be eloquent on the platform. That doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be a good speaker, but they do have to have conversational skills, that they have something worthwhile to say. They don't do a whole lot of annoying mannerisms and vocalized pauses and things like that. So you might want to check out a little video footage if it's possible. And then the P is for prepared, that they're willing to do a little bit of homework versus just showing up and spouting off.
Right. That's deep.
That is so deep.
So, Kristen, once you've got your deep panelists enrolled, and there they are in the stage, the sidebar to your article talks about a way to sequence the questions from strategic to tactical. Could you say a few words about what that looks like?
Yeah. So the sidebar to the latest article I wrote on how to moderate a virtual panel, which we haven't even gotten into, and I've got lots right. of ideas on that one. I think one of the biggest responsibilities that we have as a panel moderator is to what I call curate fabulous questions. And by curate, that means that you assemble the list of questions that you want to ask people. And you don't ask them because you're curious. You ask them because your audience is curious about those questions. And so you really need to know the level of understanding about that topic in the audience. So if the audience is already well along in their learning journey, don't start at the beginning of defining simple terms. You want to start where they are in their learning journey and ask questions that they care about. So I call that process kind of curating questions, and it's about reaching out to other experts, reaching out to your panelists, reaching out to other people who are going to be in the audience, reaching out to the meeting organizer, and assembling that list of potential questions. And you always want to have at least two or three times as many questions than you think you're going to be able to ask. Because I always find that some panelists will answer them in the first minute of their conversation. And then you're like going, I got nothing. Where do I go from here? Oh, no. So you always want to have those questions in your back pocket. And then you want to be able to sequence them. A nice, easy way of sequencing them is to start broad, start strategic, high level, and then get more specific and detailed where it seems that we need more detail.
Do you have an example of each one of those, maybe?
Sure. So we started pretty high altitude strategic in this podcast. Like, you guys do this naturally, right? And then as you become more immersed in the topic, you then start drilling down into detail. So you start strategic. You might want to address the benefits of why it might be interesting for the audience to listen in, or what are the consequences if they don't moderate a panel very well. And then you get into the more specifics. And then I always like to finish, if you don't get into it in the panel discussion, I always like to finish with application. What's the call to action? And I think that many of us forget this last little piece. It's like, hey, we've got a great conversation. Hey, Ryan, Greg, it's been great talking with you. Yeah. Okay. See you in 5 years. And it's like, the listener is going, so what am I supposed to do with that? Nick Morgan wrote a great book. He said, give a speech, change the world. Moderate a panel discussion, change the world. Why did you bother to have that panel discussion? Why should people invest their time and energy in listening to you and the panelists if you're not going to ask them to do something with that information? If you don't have that kind of conversation during the panel, I always like having a wrap-up question of, you know, if there's one thing that you want people to understand, remember, or take away with them as a result of this conversation, what would it be?
Mm. I really like that. You talk about a moderator as an advocate for the audience, and you mentioned that in our last conversation, as opposed to, well, if I really want to know this, I'm sure that my audience does. I think that's absolutely a huge critical difference. Now, again, you already read our mind, and we already alluded to, and that's also part of the reason why we're speaking with you again today. Maybe you could share with us some of the major differences between having a panel discussion in a live event or in a live setting compared to a virtual setting, which we're finding ourselves in virtually every day.
Every day. Well, first and foremost, virtual is not the same as face-to-face. Even though you might have moderated several panels in a live world, moderating a virtual panel is much different. And let me give you a couple of examples. The pace is much quicker. People get bored easier. And it is a much more visual medium. You actually have more opportunities to engage the audience from a visual perspective than you would if you were in a ballroom, which sounds kind of different, but there's really an opportunity here. So I think from a virtual perspective, you have different tools to use. You have different opportunities. You have a Q&A box. You have a chat box. You have ways that people can annotate onto a slide. You have different ways that people can engage. You can have, you know, you can be seeing people if it's a small group, if it's a larger group. You can still see people, but you have to work at it. It's just not the same. But here's the caveat. If you are not very good as a face-to-face moderator, you will not be very good as a virtual moderator.
Hmm.
It's different skill sets. So you could be a great face-to-face speaker, but you cannot take that speech and just put it on a platform and expect that it's going to go over the same way.
Yeah.
There are different ways that you have to engage the audience. There are different ways that you, I mean, it's a much faster medium. People are prone to multitask. So how do you get them to just want to lean in and spend their time with you?
Mm.
So what that does is it makes you have to think like an event producer. You are an event producer. You are no longer a panel moderator. Oh, yes, you are. But you're really producing an event. So think like a TV show producer. Think segments. Your panel normally has like an introduction, welcome, and then you introduce the panelists and you tee up the topic and then you have some curated questions and then you have audience Q&A and then you thank people. That's a basic kind of format flow, kind of boring, kind of traditional. In a virtual environment, you really have to break it down into smaller bite-sized segments and switch it up and make people go, oh, that's interesting. I didn't expect that. I'm going to keep watching because otherwise they're going to flip to another channel.
Cut to camera two. Let's go to commercial.
Kristen, I have another question along the lines we're just going here of how to present differently when it's virtual. And I'm not really curious about this, but I think our audience is. So that's why I'm going to ask it. Just kidding. But this is the question. Do you think that when you're presenting virtually, whether actually you're sitting on the panel as a panelist or the moderator of the panel, do you think there's something about being maybe more expressive than you would be at a live event, maybe even like leaning into the camera, backing away to kind of give some variety? Do you think that's kind of part of the aesthetic, if you will?
Absolutely. You know, as a presenter, you call it stagecraft.
Mm-hmm.
In the virtual world, you would call that camera craft. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I think this is my next blog posting.
Ah.
Stagecraft versus camera craft. Because when you're presenting in a live, you've got much more physicality.
Yeah.
And people, unless you're on an IMAG, people don't see your facial expressions nearly as intensely or intently as when you're in a virtual panel. And depending on how you're set up, most people frame their headshots. You could also do a panel where it's from your waist on up and you're standing and you have much more room for expression. So a lot of what you need to be thinking about as a virtual panelist or as a panel moderator is to make sure that your camera is positioned appropriately so it's not looking up your nose. Make sure that there's good lighting so that you don't have shadows over your faces. Make sure that your background represents you appropriately and it's not full of clutter. I got to tell you this. I was moderating a panel in the early days. I did not really pay attention to people's backgrounds until I watched the replay. And literally there was a picture, an abstract picture behind the panelist of a phallus. And I was just mortified. I was like, oh my God, I had no idea. So for me, I learned that lesson of, especially in the virtual world, that you really need to take a look at people's backgrounds, look at their lighting, check the audio, make sure that, you know, that what you're seeing is what you get. If people are going to be very expressive, I like leaning in. I like moving to the right, moving to the left. A lot of people are using virtual backgrounds as a way of presenting information and slides.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do that, which is a neater way than PowerPoint, I would recommend that you practice so that if you're leaning to the left, the information is to the right. If you're sitting in the middle of the camera, you have information on either the right or the left. Or if you're on the right, the information is on the left, and you are not covering the information that you want to display.
Would that be the same with the panelists? So you're on the right side and they're sitting on the left, or does that not come into play?
A lot of times you do not have the opportunity to figure out where your panelists are in relationship to you. Some platforms are more sophisticated in that they can put the moderator to the left. If you're in a Western country, they put the moderator to the right in an Eastern country. That's all, you know, more culturally influenced. Less technical platforms, it's just, you know, whoever shows up on your screen, it's the gallery view. And the moderator doesn't have a specific highlighted place.
Kristen, just as the time from 5 years ago went so quickly, our time here today has gone so quickly once again. I'd like to invite you to cue up our audience with a call to action. And I'm gonna start with one here now, which is to encourage our listeners, give it a shot, this level 5 elective and pathways of moderating a panel discussion, and take some notes on this interview. Go back to Kristen's article from June 2020. Go back to the one from 5 years ago, and play with this and experiment. Because, like Kristen said, it's a learned skill that you develop over time. So, Kristen, I know you may have another call to action, but I know you mentioned the new book that you have coming out. Do you want to say a word about that, or perhaps give some other call to action for our listeners?
Oh, sure. I have a book coming out the 3rd of November called 123 Ways to Add Pizzazz to a Panel Discussion, because I truly believe that panels are a great format when done well. And people want it to be exciting and interesting and informative. So also have virtual variations in that book, which I'm very excited about, to help all of us as we try to transition to this virtual platform. My call to action would be, whether you're new to moderating a panel or you've had lots of experience in the face-to-face, don't be scared of the digital world. Mm. People are learning more. I mean, these tools have been around for at least a decade, and people are now just adopting them because they have no choice. So their learning curve is highly accelerated. Your learning curve, you're at a perfect time where people are very forgiving. They want you to succeed. They're willing to put up with, like, oh, well, you know, this doesn't work, or, oh, the video didn't play, or, you know, oh, the latency issues that might occur. It's all okay. But do your homework. Plan your panel out. Make sure that you know your digital platform and what the capabilities are to engage the audience, and really think about how can you make this just great for you, that you're enjoying yourself, great for your panelists, but most importantly, that your audience gets that intimate conversation with meaningful takeaways that they can't get anywhere else.
And of course, incorporate all of those Toastmaster skills that you've been acquiring over the years.
Exactly.
I also want to point out to our listeners, too, we didn't even get a chance to touch on this, but point 12 in your article is called Have a Backup Plan. And it's all about things you can do in advance to avoid tech disasters before they begin. So lots of hard-fought wisdom in Kristen's article, and I recommend everyone give it a read. Kristen Arnold, thank you so much for joining us again. A total pleasure.
My pleasure. Anytime, 5 years from now.
Or sooner.
Or sooner. Why not?
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.